Planting a tree is not the only way to make your community more beautiful, and Trees Forever understands that. Today, we'll find out how Trees Forever supports prairie reconstruction. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. I'll talk with Brad Riphagen and Patty Peterson of Trees Forever about their work with prairie reconstruction. We'll also find out how you can integrate native plants into your landscape. And Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here to answer your questions. Call us at 866-780-9100 or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here in a few minutes to answer your questions. But first, we're going to focus on prairie reconstruction and gardening with native plants. And we have some unlikely experts on that subject with us today. Brad Riphagen and Patty Peterson are both field coordinators with Trees Forever. Hello, Brad and Patty.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here today. And Patty, when I think about Trees Forever, of course, I think about trees. So give me a little bit of a history on Trees Forever's involvement with prairie reconstruction.
Okay. Well, we've had a long involvement with prairie, but I do want to address trees first because people do expect that an organization called Trees Forever plants trees, and we've been spending the last year celebrating 25 years of our history as a charitable organization. And our leaflet that just came out shows that we have planted over 1 million trees, and that is because of our good members, volunteers, partners, and sponsors that have helped do that, to plant and care for those trees. However, we do expand. We do get involved with not only trees, but also shrubs, native flowers and plants, native grasses and flowers, because we understand the connectedness of nature and how all of those plants together help promote a healthy future. And all of those plants, too, create ecosystem services. So they're important not only just for us to look at, but also for our well-being, ours and all the other little creatures that we share the earth with.
And Brad, that's where you came in, because you were actually brought on board many years ago because of your expertise with prairies, right?
Well, that was part of it, yes. I had been spending a little time in Madison, going to another university. And had the opportunity to do some prairie restoration at that time. So that is how I became involved. I get to do a lot of prairie work, but I also do a lot of tree planting as well.
Now, I think that the idea of prairie reconstruction has just been growing and growing and growing over the last really couple of decades. Do we know a lot more about how to plant a prairie now than we did, say, 20 years ago?
That's an excellent question. And I would say yes. We have a better understanding of how many of the plants adapt in their landscape positions and how they do in our urban conditions as well. Because we do a lot of plantings as well in urban situations as opposed to large plantings out in the rural settings.
Well, and that's been a real area of growth, no pun intended, but because you see a lot more urban prairies than you used to. It used to be if people were going to get involved in prairie reconstruction, they had several acres out in the country that they wanted to work on. But now we see a lot more smaller patches of prairie, right?
This is correct. That's correct. And as Patty mentioned, the ecosystem services are very important in terms of utilizing those native plants beyond their impact for the native the native insects and wildlife that are benefit from there. There's a lot of reasons we use them in terms of, say, for instance, just a rain garden that has become a much more popular practice that is going to be capturing roof water or driveway water or whatever that now is going to be encouraged to infiltrate into our soils as opposed to being shot off down into the nearest stream.
A lot of people are trying to integrate native plants into their own personal landscapes in their yards. Is there a space that's too small for this kind of work? Is there, do you ever say, I don't think that's worth the effort?
Depends what your goal is. I don't think there is ever a space too small. And if it's one plant that is a native to where you live, and that's Iowa, I see no reason why you shouldn't be including that in your landscape. It is, you know, as well, it's like, it is part of my heritage being an Iowan that I can plant these plants that are native to my state. And so that's one of the reasons I encourage it, is that now, okay, maybe I want to put a butterfly milkweed next to my house. Maybe I want to put a prairie blazing star. I mean, we have lovely colors, very spectacular plants that will do well in our landscapes. So that's one way that everybody could include a native in their property plantings.
Now, when you think about these large prairies out in the country somewhere, fire is a really important part of the renewal process. Of course, that's really not an option for most urban prairies because it's just not safe. How do you get around that in trying to establish a strong prairie?
Well, there are a number of ways you can do that. It's similar to your flower bed that you have in the fall. A lot of people will remove the old plant material that has died and then compost it or whatever. You can do the same thing with a prairie situation. And I guess I would encourage folks to leave that plant material till the spring, because there's a lot of winter interest that goes along with the plants that you're putting in terms of prairie plants. Seed heads are awesome. There's some actual, people might not think of it, they think of their trees coloring up in the fall, but there are grasses that color up beautifully in the fall that are prairie grasses and native to the state.
Now, speaking of seed heads, if you have neighbors who have native plants who would allow you to do this, does it work well to go out and collect your own seeds?
Yes, actually. Now, the question would be, where are you going to do that and whether you have permission to do it? Because you're not just allowed to go out into the local roadside and go collect seeds unless you have permission from the DOT or the local remnant. So if your neighbor has a plant that you want to collect seed off of, some of them actually reseed quite readily. So there are those questions as well, whether some of those you want to plant. But those are the kinds of issues that we try to deal with folks up front so that they know what to put in the ground that's not going to take over as well.
And how do you help people choose what to plant? Because, I mean, if you're not going to be trying to create a tall grass prairie, but just incorporate some of these native plants into your yard, you have to be a lot more selective.
This is true. I would say we encourage them to sit down with us or find a way to learn more about those plants that you're working with. There are a number of opportunities out there to find out about the plants. So tap into some session that allows you to learn what the plants are and what they do, what they look like, what they look like when they're mature, what they look like when they're small. And we, as an organization, are funded to assist folks, or actually to offer a series of sessions for folks to attend in their regions to learn more about prairie. And so this year, if anybody is interested, we are offering those in Monona County, Hardin County, and Muscatine. And so those are available free of charge. We take a group of folks out. They get to visit some of their local remnant prairies to see what the plants actually do out in the ecosystem that they were evolved in, and as well as take them to some plantings that a community put in or are going to be putting in. So we have them do planting as well.
And what time of year do you do those sessions?
Well, we'll be starting them in May. And so they are staggered. We do typically a session once a month. So May, maybe June or July, and we stagger them all through the summer so people can see what those plants will look like at various stages of their growth process and see what the whole interaction is of those the grasses and the forbs out there in the landscape. And then typically at the last session, we will have them out doing an actual planting of some of those plants that they've been learning about over the period of the summer.
All right. And people can find out about those classes at treesforever.org. We were just talking about collecting seeds. So if you want to try to collect seeds, you need to ask, make sure that you can collect them where you have an idea. But prairie seeds, native grass seeds, and native plants that you can purchase have become much more available in recent years. But still, it takes a little bit of looking around. Where do you recommend that people go?
Well, I'm not going to recommend a particular nursery, but okay. there are several of them available. And I've been doing a little looking myself. There are some websites. We have a list that we have generated at Trees Forever, so you could simply call one of us or send a request to our website and ask for that. I did recently go to Plant Iowa Native. This is a website that's been put together, I believe, through the Tallgrass Prairie Center out of UNI. And there are a lot of resources listed on that website. So they have gone through and listed all the sites or all the nurseries that provide seed or plants or services to folks interested in prairies. So that is a valuable place to go. There are a number of organizations beyond ours that specifically promote prairies. So, for instance, the Iowa Prairie Network is one of those that does specifically promotes prairie as part of their mission. So I would suggest a little research. If you're not able to do that research online, give us a call at Trees Forever, and we would be more than happy to direct you in the correct down that road.
Now, there's a lot of interest in milkweed and other kinds of plants that would support particularly monarch butterflies, but butterfly gardens are also very popular. But beyond that, what are some of the native plants that you recommend to people to put in their yards or gardens when they don't have a lot of space?
My start here is with the grasses. It's not probably something people think of right away, but it is one of the plants that is going to give you some major benefits in your landscape. So one of my favorites is little bluestem grass, which tends to show in just about all the various prairie types that we have in the state. Maybe not the most wet sites, but it'll move from dry to mesic and maybe wet mesic a little bit. Mesic meaning moderate, good moisture levels, great soils. And so it does well on a variety of sites. And it is one of those grasses that, being native to the state, provides those services that natives do, but it also is ornamental. So it will look great in your landscape throughout the summer as well as into the fall, because it colors a red color in the fall, and then it has a lovely fluffy white seed head. So if you get the sun shining on in the right direction, it's a beautiful plant.
Nice. Really almost glows, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And of course, both Brad and Patty can answer questions about trees or about native prairie plants. And also, Richard Giron will be joining us in just a moment. He can answer all of your other questions about the plants in your life. You can join by giving us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour is Horticulture Day, and we're talking about native plants and prairie reconstruction. We are also here to answer all of your questions about the plants in your life. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Brad Riphagen and Patty Peterson are field coordinators with Trees Forever. They are here today. And Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here with us now. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And let's jump right into the phones. Jeff is on the line in Lone Rock. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm a landowner up in northern Iowa, and I'd like to put in a little strip of a prairie next to my house to address some rain coming off the roof. And so I'm curious when the best time is to go ahead and establish that, and then whether I should seed it or get plants, or just kind of how to go about that.
Good morning, Jeff. This is Brad. My question to you would be, there'd be several. How large of an area are you doing? And then what is your budget? And I guess that would be where I'd start, and what the soils are like.
So the soils are pretty wet because they get some rainwater there. And I just want to strip about 3 or 4 feet wide and maybe 50 feet long. And, you know, I probably have couple hundred dollars to spend.
Mm-hmm. So you probably would be looking at, when you're looking at a couple hundred dollars, you'd probably be looking to seed. And that would be something, if it's sod, you would want to do something to either remove the sod or to kill the sod. And you could then go in. This is actually a good time of year to be seeding, probably later this month or into June. It is May 1st. And it would be good this time of year to be doing the seeding. Or you can wait till this fall if you think you're going to have heavy weed pressure. And one of the things I would recommend is if you are going to seed, to actually see, once you have killed what's there, to see what's coming up. And if you have a lot of weed pressure, to continue to do that probably through the summer and then maybe seed this fall in October.
All right. Does that give you a working plan, Jeff? I think.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's an email from Ann. I planted swamp milkweed plugs last year and have not seen them come up yet in the garden. Is it too early? When might I expect to see them emerge? If it is relevant, I planted them in a semi-shady site.
I would give them another couple weeks. If you don't see anything by May 20th, I'd be concerned, but they still might come up. So assume they're still okay and just be patient.
All right. And this next email is not about a plant to plant, but about a plant that a lot of people are working really hard to get rid of. This is from Kate in Iowa City. She says, can we get a shout out for the garlic mustard invasive species? It seems to be perfect right now. I make pesto with it and it's wonderful, but let's help promote removing this from our lands. So it is a time of year when we see garlic mustard coming up all over the place, and a lot of people are trying to pull it to get rid of it. Can one of you give us a little bit of advice if you want to be a part of that effort?
Well, there are a number of groups gathering to pull it. You do want to make sure you, I'll say, just put it in a plastic bag, because we don't want the seed. The seeds are very tiny and can be carried away to new sites. So put the plant in a garbage bag and remove it from the site. Would you add anything to that, Brad?
I've seen large areas managed with fire on a regular basis to control garlic mustard, but as far as on a personal site, I would go along with what Patty said.
And maybe clean your shoes as you leave the site, because the seed can stick to the shoes on the mud, so clean your shoes before you leave the site.
And you want to try to pull it before it flowers, although it seems to flower so early.
Yeah. You want to do it before it actually goes to seed. That's the main thing, so that it doesn't basically propagate itself.
And I like the idea of making some food. You know, it's like lemonade from lemons, so making some pesto. And
yeah, it's pretty good in salads, too,
yes.
I have to say. And what I've also noticed is a lot of people will pull it and they'll put it sort of in the center of a trail if it hasn't gone to seed, thinking, oh, that'll take care of it. I have seen it just start growing again just because it's laying there on the ground. It is a really tenacious plant.
It is. Yes, it is.
All right. And a real problem all over the Midwest, probably farther than that. All right. Here's an email from Janine in Iowa City. I have about 4 acres of reconstructed prairie that I started about 12 years ago. We have done controlled burns 3 times. Even so, battling invasive species, particularly, and I don't know how to say this, but I'll try, Pastinaca sativa and reed canary grass. It's ongoing and beginning to overwhelm me. Is there something I can do to get help with this? Information, labor, or funds?
That you are talking about very difficult weed issues that we are having with more prairies that are even older than that as well. Reed canary grass is an issue I don't know that we're ever going to solve, but it is something that we struggle with all of our prairie reconstructions, especially if there's a wet area in that part of that site. It was a very successful plant that we introduced that allowed us to hold soil in wet areas, and it has gone invasive on us, sadly. My thought is, if you're able to or willing to, there are some you can spot treat if it's a contained area. You can possibly spot treat with an herbicide. If you're not willing to do that, that is fine. There may be ways to smother the area. The concern with reed canary grass is the seed bank is so huge. They produce such a huge amount of seed. It's going to be something that we continue to battle as long as we're doing prairie reconstructions, in my mind, because it's persistent. But I guess that's a couple of options, is maybe to deal with it on a using a treatment of some sort, a glyphosate product, or something on the order of smothering, or depending on how large of an area it is, you may be able to remove on a just a manual scale.
Okay. Sounds like probably a lot of the stuff that she's been doing over time, but it is just one of those struggles that goes on and on. Here's one for you, Richard. This is from Susan and Jewel. How soon can I dig up and move tulip bulbs after they've bloomed?
Right. You want to wait until the actual foliage dies back. And so typically after they're done blooming, the foliage will persist for 4 to 6 weeks. And during that time, the foliage is manufacturing food and storing that food back in the bulb. And that time is critical. If they don't store enough food, they don't bloom the next year. So let the foliage die back completely, then dig them up and replant.
All right. Now back to the phones. This is Gloria in Garyville, Wisconsin. Hi, Gloria.
Hello. That's Garyville with an F.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. What's your question?
That's okay. Well, I wonder if they have any tips on planting on a slope. I have about a 30-degree slope. And I'd like to plant wildflower seeds and maybe some native grasses there.
So you are, how large of an area is it, Gloria?
Well, it's probably like to do about 1,000 square feet.
Okay. And you're looking to do seeding, correct?
Yes.
And what's the existing vegetation?
There's no vegetation.
Oh, there's no vegetation. It's a bare slope?
It's a bare slope.
Okay.
So there's some topsoil, but it's mainly gravel and rock underneath.
Okay, so you're going to be looking at a specific suite of plants ultimately that's going to go back in there that can handle that type of situation. So some of those ridge prairies that occur in along the rivers and so forth deal with that kind of shallow soil. So species selection is going to be important for what you're going to be putting back there. As far as where you're at right now, I would be concerned about stabilizing that slope first. And so if there's a way that you can get a cover crop started out there, some sort of annual grass would be a best way to go about something like that. And then that's going to give you some organic material to start with for your plantings. And if you can then either cut that back very shortly in the fall, which probably not on a slope like that you'll be able to do, and it may not get a real heavy stand either. So you may just want to come back in and seed on top of that once that goes dead in the fall, depending on what seed you decide.
Any particular type of, like rye, or are you talking rye or oats?
Yeah, something on that order. I would suggest you might want to talk to your local NRCS or other governmental organization, County Conservation Board in the area. They may have a recommendation that I don't know about at this point. Those would be a couple that I would look at doing, but I would ask them first before you go ahead.
Thank you.
All right, Gloria. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We're talking about native plants and prairies. We're also talking about whatever you want to talk about. So give us a call, 866-780-9100. I have Brad Ribhagen and Patty Peterson here from Trees Forever and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Next up, Kathy in Iowa City. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, about 5 years ago, I called in, and I had an ash tree that we had to take out, and I got suggestions for replacement, and I went Japanese tree lilac, and it has never bloomed.
Well, I will say that many of your flowering trees have to grow and mature before they can bloom, and for some plants, they're just very reluctant. I would give the tree, if it looks healthy, I would give the tree another 2 or 3 years to bloom. And given a chance, I think it will. But if it's really kind of sickly, I might replace it. But if it looks good, I'd keep it for another year or two.
No, it looks real good.
Okay. How big is it?
The people at the nursery suggested that I use some, like, tree spikes that they use for fruit trees. Does that sound helpful? Or?
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary. Most Iowa soils are quite fertile, and they can supply the trees with sufficient nutrients. Actually, if you fertilize, you may actually discourage flowering, in that if you fertilize heavily with nitrogen, that encourages vegetative growth and actually discourages flower development. So I would not fertilize myself. Now, I would, if we have a very dry summer, I would actually go out there and water periodically, because the flower buds actually form in mid to late summer of the previous year. And so if we're having a stressful year, maybe it won't form flower buds, but I would maybe water it, but I wouldn't fertilize it.
Yeah, well, I water it all the time, and all the other trees around it are blooming beautifully. So I'll hold out hope that in the next 2 or 3 years it blooms.
They're kind of like kids. Some are late bloomers, so that's just the way it is.
Adults, too.
Yes.
Kathy, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. Gary is on the line next from Sheridan. Hi, Gary. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Thank you. I want to talk about, that last caller reminded me about those bags of 50,000 flower seeds that I buy every year. They never come up, no matter where I put them. And I want to talk about watermelons growing them from seed. What's the best way to do it? I don't seem to have good luck with that.
Well, I would probably plant in your area maybe in another week or 10 days. I typically plant my melons in hills, where I plant like maybe 4 or 5 seeds in a hill. And when they germinate, I remove all but 2 or 3. I would probably space the actual hills maybe 4 to 5 feet apart in the row, and the rows maybe 5 to 8 feet apart, because they are vines. They take up a lot of space, but they're not hard to grow. Don't plant them very deep. And if it's a good sunny site, well-drained soil, they should do just fine.
All right. And next weekend, you said?
I think so. Yeah, next weekend.
And they're one of those that's pretty easy to direct sow, right?
Absolutely.
You don't need to start your plants.
No. I don't think there's much advantage to starting them indoors. The seeds are fairly large. They typically germinate within like a week.
All right, Gary, good luck with that. Thanks for your call. Next up, we've got Dave in Donelson. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I have a question about a Bloodgood Japanese maple that I received as a gift last fall, late. And we planted it the first week of November, kept it watered well, looked good going into the winter. But this spring, although there was some green under the bark, now it is just dead and brittle. So I'm wondering, it did have a replacement, free replacement, so when is a good time to get another one of those and replant it?
Well, again, I'd probably give it another 2 weeks. When you plant a tree, that first winter can be very difficult for it because it's not very well established. And it might still possibly be alive, but just kind of hanging on. So I'd be inclined to just give it a couple more weeks. If you don't really see anything by May 20th, I'd replace it. And I would do it then, if you could. Sometime early in the growing season, so they have the rest of the growing season to get established. So they would have June, July, August, September, and early fall. So if you don't see anything by May 20th, I'd replace it and plant it promptly.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. Good luck with that. And next up, Faith in Des Moines. Hi, Faith.
Hi. My question is about rhubarb. I have a couple of plants that are maybe 4 years old, and the center stalk is going to seed, and I'm wondering if that's keeping the plant from flourishing, if I should cut off those, that sort of like blossom, or leave it alone, or?
Well, rhubarb, like any plant, does want a flower, but when you see a flower stalk, pull it out immediately, because if it's allowed to flower, it weakens the plant. And you want all the energy going into more stock production. So once you see that, pull it off or cut it out immediately.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Faith. And you can join our conversation at 866 780-9100. Here's an email question from Emily. I've got a silver maple in the backyard where there's approximately a 2-inch diameter hole. Large black carpenter ants come in and out of this hole and into this tree. I've tried powders to keep the ants out of the tree, but is there something I can use to plug the hole in the tree?
Not really. That used to be a common practice where they would put in cement or something, tar, that really typically doesn't help. The carpenter ants themselves are kind of secondary. They don't really cause that much harm to the tree. So the real issue is the hole, the rotting wood. And there's really no way to deal with that. The tree has to deal with that as best it can by itself. So if you were to try to, let's say, fill it with cement or whatever, it actually may make it worse. So just leave it open as best you can, kind of monitor it. If the area gets larger, then obviously it's going to structurally weaken the tree and it may make it more vulnerable to storm damage. So,
okay. All right. But it's a fairly small hole, so it could also last a long time?
It could. We had a tree in our yard that had a squirrel living in the cavity. That tree was there for over 40 years, so...
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, horticulturist Richard Giron and Brad Riphagen and Patty Peterson, field coordinators with Trees Forever. We'll get back to taking your questions in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Also, Brad Riphagen and Patty Peterson, field coordinators with Trees Forever. And you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Corey in West Des Moines. I just put in a raised bed to grow vegetables. I have the soil and compost in and was getting ready to plant. Now I have a large anthill in the works in the middle of the bed. I've tried drowning it by drenching it daily with the hose in an effort to discourage them. As expected, they just keep coming back. Will this be a problem for my tomatoes? Is there anything I can do that won't compromise the soil?
Yeah, typically they're not much of a concern, so I would probably ignore them. If you want to get rid of them, just keep on agitating their area as far as digging it up, and they'll probably go elsewhere.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Paula is on the line in Johnston. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I'm in Johnston, Iowa, just north on the north side of Des Moines, and I have four 25-year-old Norwegian spruces. I believe they're Norwegian spruces on the north side of the house, and they are starting to do poorly the last couple of years. They're basically dying from the bottom up. As I say, it's on the north side of the house, and it's about 25 feet between my house and the neighbors, so they don't get a lot of direct sunlight in there. So I'm wondering, they're probably going to have to be replaced in the next few years. What should I replace them with? More spruce, other conifers, deciduous? What would you advise?
Well, the choice is kind of yours as far as evergreen versus deciduous. If they are Norway spruce, those trees are typically very reliable. Mm-hmm. We don't see too many insect problems, disease problems, so I'm not sure why they would be dying. As far as replacements, as far as evergreens, white pines would be a possibility. Conifer fir is a very pretty tree, very nice thing. You could go in with maybe small trees if you wanted, like crab apples would be nice if you wanted that. Or maybe a shrub, like maybe lilacs or dogwoods, would be possibilities.
All right.
And what was that fir that you mentioned?
Concolor or white fir. Goes by either name, concolor or white. It's a very pretty tree, very conical, very dense, kind of a blue-green, a very, very attractive tree.
Mm-hmm. Would it fit in that small area as it grows?
Well,
is it a wide tree?
It's going to be 20, 25 feet wide at maturity. Mm-hmm. It may be 35, 40, 45 feet tall. So it can be a very big tree.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very similar to a spruce in as far as the appearance.
All right, Paula, thank you so much for your call. And let's go to another question about planting a tree. This one is from Anne Marie. She says, we're looking for a good shade tree for my daughter's home in a newer subdivision in eastern Iowa. One condition to consider is that after a rain, the soil remains wet and squishy for about 3 days. The water pools in the grass. We keep getting conflicting advice. We've been advised to try a tulip tree, but a local nursery says they're not viable in the area. We're not excited about river birch or bald cypress. We want a nice canopy like maple, but we don't want a maple because everybody has a maple and some maples are dying.
Well, they have eliminated quite a few trees there. I think I would still look at maybe one of the red maple, silver maple hybrids. They're pretty adaptable. They're very nice trees. Autumn Blaze is a very common cultivar. Sierra Glen is a nice one. They're easy to grow. They should tolerate the wet soils, I think, pretty well. And they have very nice fall color. So I would consider maybe one of these Freeman maples, which is a red maple, silver maple hybrid. I really do like the bald cypress. I think it's a really neat plant. It's a deciduous conifer. You see it in the Gulf Coast in the swamps. So it loves the wet soils, and it's very, very hardy. And we can grow it here in Iowa, and it has very distinctive foliage, kind of a soft, kind of a medium green color. And then in the fall, it turns kind of a orangey brown. We have some here on campus at Iowa State, and they are very distinctive trees. So I would consider it.
All right. Well, and when I think about squishy soil, I think about weeping willows just because I have a real weakness for them.
Right,
but
right.
I know not everybody does.
Right. They are very distinctive as far as the appearance. They're very, very nice, but they tend to be kind of messy, and they tend to be short-lived. So they look nice. They look nice if they're on the neighbor's property, but... But they can't
well, you can come look at them at my house,
no,
Richard.
No, we had one in our yard, and it was nice. It did look nice, but it was kind of messy a little bit as far as dead material.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Patty is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I have on a website for a 10 by 15 garden, and I want to know if I can grow Brussels sprouts in it. And do I use seeds or what?
Okay, how to grow Brussels sprouts.
And you have a 10 by 15 foot space. You can definitely grow those. That's enough space.
I'm sorry, Patty, we couldn't hear you. What?
Is there a website for 10 by 15 gardens?
Oh, I see. So she wants a website design for, well, let's just talk about the Brussels sprouts.
Right. We don't really have a design per se, but you can definitely plant those. Now, they tend to perform best when they're grown as a fall crop. And so you could start these from seed indoors in July and then set the transplants out in early August. And then they should mature hopefully in October, early November. So that's what I would do. You might be able to buy these at a garden center maybe in midsummer, but they definitely do better as a fall crop. When we plant them in the spring, they just don't really form much as far as those little sprouts. So try them as a fall crop.
Okay, good luck with that. They seem to be getting more and more popular.
Yeah, they are, and they're easy to grow, actually. Most people in Iowa plant them in the spring, and that's where they get the bad reputation.
Okay, and for flavor, perhaps.
Yes, when they mature in midsummer, they tend to be very bitter. So.
Oh, okay, all right. Here's an email. I just purchased an older house on the Mississippi River. We have about 150 linear feet of riverfront. The whole front has been taken over by an established abundance of purple loosestrife. Any suggestions on ways to eradicate this invasive species without digging up those stubborn root-bound plants?
I think probably using some type of glyphosate product would be the best.
Now, I'm sure that there are people cringing everywhere when
know,
they hear you say
I know.
That because it's right on the river. And...
But rodeo is something that you can use. It's a glyphosate product, but you can use that near waterways. You wouldn't want to use the normal Roundup, but you can use rodeo.
Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on that one? I mean, the purple loosestrife is such a problem. It's very beautiful when it blooms, but it can just totally take over an area where there's moisture.
And I would concur with Richard, but it's like we talked about with the reed canary grass earlier. Prolific seed producer and loves where it's at in terms of the moisture level. And so It is going to be a persistence level on your part in terms of removing it. So it's going to be something that you need to stay at on a regular basis, because once you back off for a little bit at a time, it's just going to show right back up.
So. All right. One of those situations where Donald Lewis suggests it's a lifetime hobby. Just look
correct.
On the bright side.
At least a few years.
Right. All right. Let's go back to the phones. David's on the line in Muscatine. Hi, David.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have vines that are taking over my oak trees, and I'm wondering, other than trying to chop the vines down, because some of them are getting pretty big, what I can do for them.
What kind of vines do you know?
I have no idea. It's it looks kind of, the leaf on it looks like a poison ivy, kind of a teardrop looking. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have heard of it before. Or...
Well, the things that come to mind would be poison ivy, Virginia creeper, maybe some type of bittersweet. What I would be inclined to do is, if you wanted to kill the vines, what I would do is cut them off near the ground. I would buy some Roundup. Again, I'm going to say Roundup, but this works. Where you also buy a small foam-type paintbrush. You dip the paintbrush in the Roundup, and then you dab it on the cut surface. And that living tissue will absorb the Roundup. It goes down into the root system. It should kill that vine. And you're not spraying a large area. You're just putting it on the cut surface.
Okay. I have... literally a 40-acre piece that has this, so
okay.
Individually is just about impossible.
Well, I don't know any other way of doing it. It's something that if you want to get rid of them, you probably have to start and just slowly progress through the area and get rid of them.
All right, and he should make sure, he should check out whether it's poison ivy or not, right?
Absolutely, right. If it has three apparent leaves, they're really leaflets, then that's probably poison ivy, yes.
All right, and then that's a little more serious problem.
Right.
All right, David, thank you very much for your call, and let's go to Jerry in Des Moines. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a speakerphone. Hi there.
Hi. What's your question?
I have two questions. One, we have a large wooded area. I mean, not large, but a couple acres. And that I think it's an Asian shrub that is very invasive, has taken over in between all of our trees. And we found the only way to really get rid of it is to, like on the big ones, you have to wrap a chain around it and pull it out with your truck. So we've been working this, and we've got a lot of it cleared. I'm wondering what to plant in there. I want to put some trees in between what we have now, because now we have some more space. But what will keep that from coming back? It's everywhere.
Well, I think, again, you're going to have to be persistent. I don't know if this is buckthorn or maybe honeysuckle. Those are two both exotic type shrubs that you typically see in the woods. You can identify the honeysuckles early in the spring because they're one of the first woody plants to leaf out in the spring. It's apparent what they are. The birds love the fruit. They deposit the seed. And so I think this is going to require persistence, again, on your part, where you go out there by various means and try to destroy the plants. And then I guess I would be inclined to try some of the native plants that you would find in the woods, plant those. That would include some herbaceous plants, some woody plants. But I don't think they're not going to crowd it out by themselves. You're going to have to really get rid of these plants first and let them kind of take over. But they're not going to crowd out these exotic plants very well.
Okay. Well, we just have found that you can't really cut them off. They just keep coming back. So we've been pulling them. And
right.
That seems to be the answer to it, I think. But my other question is, across the street, I have some sycamores that are doing wonderful. I'd like to start sycamores. And I have the balls that have the millions of seeds on mm-hmm. them. How hard is it to get those to germinate and start?
I don't think it's that difficult. I'm not sure exactly what they would require. I would assume they would probably require maybe a moist chilling period before they would germinate. So they're actually kind of like very thin little seeds, many, many on a ball, on a fruit. I think what I would probably try is maybe sowing the seed, like in a pot or a flat, moistening the material, and then probably putting them in the refrigerator for maybe a couple months, and then taking them out and see if they'll germinate. Because most woody tree seeds need to be exposed to those cool, moist conditions before they will germinate. So I'd try that.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And we'll squeeze in a couple more questions. This one's from Ellen. After last summer's blight on impatiens, is it safe to plant them this year in the beds they were in last year? I'm seeing them in the garden centers.
No, it's not safe.
All right.
If they had it last year, no. The alternative would be the New Guinea impatiens because they're tolerant.
All right. And they could go in the same place that
yes,
you had.
Yes, they can. Okay. Yes.
All right. This one's from Michael. Can you transplant peonies? And is this the time of year or is this time of year okay to do so?
You can transplant them. They transplant fairly easily, but it's basically in September. Right now would be very, very difficult.
All right. And we'll get in one more question. This one is from Dave in Brayton. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi. We're just moving into the area, and this house has been vacant for several years. There's a lot of sucker trees growing all around the property, around the buildings. And can I'm hesitant to use Tardan because I've heard that it's systemic, and I'm afraid it would hurt my beautiful bur oaks that are nearby. Is there an alternative?
Well, now, certain trees do tend to sucker where they send up shoots from their roots. Bur oaks typically don't do that, but some trees do, like crab apples, for example. Kentucky coffee tree does. Sumacs do that. Crab apples do that. Now, if you have suckers coming up from the roots of a tree, you cannot use a herbicide on them because if you do, you might damage the parent tree. So you can't use anything like Roundup or anything of that nature. Tordon, you can't. Now, if you have some plants around bur oaks that are different plants, you can use Roundup. It's not going to affect the bur oak because with Roundup, you have to directly spray the plant to kill it. So you can actually use it around plants. You just can't get it on the plants you want to keep.
Okay, Dave, thanks a lot for your call. And now, Richard, we all wait for that Mother's Day weekend so
right.
we can get our tomatoes in and,
right.
and many other plants. I'm looking at the forecast. It looks very warm between now and Mother's Day. Can we plant some things now that we would normally wait for?
I think you can, but I think what I would do this weekend is prepare the sites, get them ready to go, and then plant next weekend.
Okay.
I'm very cautious.
says a man who's been frosted before, I'm
yes.
sure. All right. My tomatoes are so ready. They really want to get out there.
Well, plant one or two this weekend then.
All right. We'll see how they work. And we also had a question from Lynn and Ames. What does the temperature need to be at night in order to put houseplants outside?
I would say most houseplants don't like temperatures below 50. So I'd probably wait till the end of the month.
All right. Yeah, wait. Well past Mother's Day weekend for that one.
Late May.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, Brad Riphagen, and Patty Peterson, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
They're field coordinators with Trees Forever. We were talking earlier in the hour about reconstructing prairies and native plants. If you're interested in those prairie sessions offered by Trees Forever, you can go to their website, treesforever.org, and take a look at some of the things that they offer. We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. We have production assistance from Julia Davis. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can send us email anytime. We love to hear from you. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a wonderful weekend. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.